You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to today's show, Your Ultimate Life, here on LA Talk Radio. I love doing this, and I'm grateful for the guests that I have today. This show is all about helping you create a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy, and helping this 50 million goal that I have. So I'd like to welcome to the show Victoria. Victoria Kuare, am I saying that right?
Cure. It's kind of like a puree with a C.
Cure. All right. Yeah. Cure. I can do that. Cure. I knew that before, and I had to forgot to ask you in the pregame warm-up, so I screwed
it
up.
No worries.
So, Victoria, thank you for taking time to be here with us on the show today.
Thank you for having me. It's been a long time. I'm so glad to be back with you.
So we've had a chance to visit a couple of times. I was on your show, and you just told me you'd like to do that again. And I wanted to have you here because my goal is to help 50 million people this year to discover and to serve with their gifts. That's what I'm doing, and that's all I'm doing. And when I was thinking about people who have a mission and who I might be able to help and expose and spread and stuff to help them, because I'm going to reach my 50 million not alone but through others, I thought of you because of your story that I know some of and the courage that you've had to move forward. So I'm not going to start with that. What I'm going to start with is an announcement you just made that to me that I saw, and that is about your podcast. Tell us about that.
Well, we have three podcasts on A Contagious Smile. We have the regular A Contagious Smile, which is where we spotlight the survivors of domestic violence as well as other types of abuse, as well as special needs families and special needs individuals. And we show them that even the smallest flickering light can start a wildfire. And we help them on their journey of healing and remind them that they're worth fighting for. We provide resources to them as well on that particular platform. We have a Contagious Smile Teen Talk, where I have an amazing panel of teens, one of which is my daughter, Faith. And we have another Make-A-Wish recipient as well, who are our main two hosts, who offer the opportunity for teenagers to come on and have an unconditionally safe and acceptable place for teenagers to be heard, because today they're not. Their voices matter, their opinions matter, and we want to help implement their thoughts and feelings and make them a reality. When I first did the first episode of Teen Talk, I'm in the back producing, and they said that the number one most feared thing they're scared of is going to school and not coming home. Is getting shot. And that wrenched me. That just absolutely tore my heart. So we've been doing things like we've had judges and chief of police's on and have the kids just talk to them about what they can do. So that's a great platform. Then we have A Contagious Smiles Unstoppable, where it's more of no guard, no filter. We're going to talk about what's going on in this world, how we can fix it, what can be done, and to take the movements to make that happen.
So I love that. And I didn't even know you had all three of those. And just listening to the description that you've given, you know, giving people of all kinds, a teen specific one, and having the kinds of people on that you have is a tremendous work of love, a labor of love. And, you know, I think one of the things we talked about before was that a podcast is a labor of love. Because there's lots of work that goes into it.
Yes, sir.
And it's driven by your heart. So what made you start three podcasts?
Well, the long story short, I've been advocating for special needs and domestic violence for over 17 years. And it's so heartwarming to know. And it really, I hate the fact that I feel like it's such a gift to me, because I want to help others and I want to see them thrive and them survive and just get onto that healing journey and realize their value. And when I realized that what I was doing locally was just getting further and further out of a local capacity, then I thought, well, let me try this podcasting thing. Because I always say I have the voice for radio, but not the face. So I started podcasting, and I was blessed with the most amazing first guest ever, which would be you. And you gave me some amazing advice. And so we really have a different way. We don't interview. we just have two people having a conversation that brings reflection and growth and healing and inspiration. And it is not myself or the other host that make the shows. It is people like you that allow us the opportunity to shine you. And that's what's made it a success.
So here we are with that role reversed. And my opportunity here is to shine you, to make you and your work a success. And your face is beautiful and your heart is spectacular.
Thank you.
And don't let anyone anywhere ever even think such things in your presence. So a smile is a contagious thing, physiologically with mirror neurons and all the rest of it. What made you pick a contagious smile as the bedrock of all of your platforms? The unfiltered talk about the world, the teen talk, and then the one that is the domestic violence and other abuse survivor thing. What made you pick a contagious smile?
Well, early on, when my daughter was life flighted to the hospital, she immediately began treatment with the best of the best. And one was the chief of the cranial facial team. And he always said, every time I see her, she has a smile. It doesn't matter what kind of smile it is. You know, I see the most beautiful children and they have a crooked smile or a half smile, whatever it is, it's just infectious. And I had both of my jaws broken and now I'm hearing impaired. So I have hearing aids in. And so I had to get 26 metal pieces in my face to replace all of my upper and lower jaw. Anyway, and I noticed that it doesn't matter what your smile looks like. You don't have to have that textbook model smile. It doesn't matter. I think the most beautiful children in the world, unfortunately, are going through medical mishaps. And that's not fair for them. But they have the best spirit and the biggest heart. And all they want to do is live life for today and everything else going on in the world. They just let it roll off their back. And when you see them and you see that smile, it's contagious. And that's how we came up with a contagious smile.
So you said something I want to dig into a little more, and that is this best spirit. What do you think, and you've had good experience, so what do you think helps, allows, prompts children who are going through medical struggles, perhaps abuse, perhaps things that happen to them, accidents or, you know, their birth situation, but still have that kind of positive outlook so that they're smiling, even though they're in the face of treatments and chemo and surgeries and all of the rest? Why are they doing that?
They take life one day at a time. They realize that they've defied the odds in front of them. They realize that every moment is precious. Like with my daughter, we have celebrated every single step, every milestone put in front of her that they said she wouldn't meet. She destroyed it. She did that and then some. So we didn't get to be the soccer mom. I didn't get to hold her when she was first born, and I didn't get to hear the baby cries. But you know what? I got to do so many things that other parents don't get to experience. And my greatest honor is being her mom. So to be able to see that, like we did she's a Make-A-Wish recipient. The whole time we were on our trip, she wanted to help everybody else. And these kids are like walking around with an IV pole and their cancer, and they have their chemo hooked up, and they just are so happy to have life, to have a day that they actually get to wake up. A lot of them have service dogs, which is why we now breed golden retriever service dogs ourselves to help, because there's a 5-year wait list, which is insane. And to see these kids that just, they want to be loved. They want to be valued. They want to be cherished, and they don't want anything in return except to be loved. And that's it. They don't care what's going on in politics or in the world or what a dozen eggs cost right now. They just are enjoying what's in front of them and what they have, and they don't take anything for granted. And that's something I think the rest of this world can really take note of.
You know, it would be, I know some of the story I'm going to now ask you to talk a little bit about, but before I do that, it could be easy for someone to say, well, you know, you have a positive outlook because you haven't had this or that kind of trouble. And everybody can run around singing the song, nobody knows the trouble I've seen but Jesus. And they might, and they do, but I know something about you, and you are the embodiment of your daughter. You are happy. You are breeding golden retrievers for service dogs. Yeah. You are running 3 podcasts, and you are doing this to make a difference in the world. And the phrase I always use is add good to the world. So tell us, you didn't fall up that mountain.
No.
Okay. You didn't fall up the mountain to a place where what's in your heart is love and service and being grateful to be the mom of your daughter with the needs that you can talk about later. But what, so tell me, tell our listeners and me, you didn't fall up the mountain. So how did you get up there?
No, sir, I didn't fall off the mountain. I grew up in a non-diagnosed, very narcissistic family. I never felt like I was good enough. And I moved out before finishing school. And I found the love of my life. My grandparents were so influential in my life. I had that very old school raising. And so I inbred that into every aspect of my life on a daily basis. And so I had the love of my life. We dated for 4 years. And we broke up. Only time in my life I ever rebounded, and I married a monster, and that's putting it mildly. He rushed me through the express line of the relationship. I traveled for work, and so I was like, oh, we don't have to move this fast. Blah, blah, blah. It's going too quick. And he was a mastermind at manipulation and narcissism. And he said, well, everybody else has had all this time. Why can't we now be happy? And the next thing I know, he's proposed and we get married. I didn't move in with him until after we were married. I had my own apartment by myself. And so I end up moving in after we're married. And not even a month later, I get pregnant. And then all of the abuse began.
So people aren't going to have any idea what that is. And I'm not. I'd like to know a little bit more about the struggles. And you can be as circumspect as you like about details. But what did that mean? So you were fooled. You grew up in a narcissistic home. You didn't know what it felt like to be loved and told you were good enough. And as I resonate with that. And you then found your grandparents who filled that void and helped you. And then you didn't make it with the relationship that was the love of your life, and then you married quickly on a rebound to someone else, and then the abuse started after the knot was tied, and so then the facade came down, and what happened?
The first time he hit me, and let me just say that one hit, one kick, one punch is one too many, and I've had a lot of people that I've been so blessed to work with that'll say, I just don't want to have you work with me in regards to the fact that, like, he only hit me one or two times and you've been hit so many times. It doesn't matter the number. If it's once, it's too many. So let me just preface that up front. And it's never a competition. So one day he was angry and the next thing I know, he threw a cell phone at me. And I just was like, that didn't just happen. I know he didn't just do that. And I was really in the denial. And then he came up and he punched me. And I said, that's not going to happen again. And I was already pregnant. And he knew I was pregnant. And as the pregnancy continued, the abuse continued, and it got more and more aggressive, if you can say that, because abuse is abuse. But it intensified. Like I said, one hit, one kick. But it went from one punch to breaking my nose if the food was on the table 5 minutes late, if his food was touching other food on the plate. If everything wasn't done to his liking, the bed had to be made a certain way. If it wasn't, there was repercussions of him putting me back in line, as he would call it. It was more and more aggressive. I fell into that battered woman syndrome, if you will, where it was like, maybe I don't deserve this. Maybe I'll never find anything of happiness again. This is what my life is going to be. I was secluded from my friends and everybody who meant anything for me. He literally picked out my clothes. He wouldn't allow me to have certain doctors. Like, he was very much against me having, originally I had a beautiful African-American woman as my OBGYN, and he was adamant that wasn't going to happen. He was not going to let, and I'll just bleep that out, deliver his child. And so that was very hard because I didn't see her skin color. I saw her credentials and her bedside manner. And I adored her. And so it was, you can only see a woman. She has to be white. this, da, 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 this is how it is. And I was just dumbfounded. I was like, this didn't just happen to me. I'm not this person. And he opened up and said, I knew never to hit you until you were pregnant because you wouldn't have taken it. Like, you would have gotten up and left. And he was right. He was absolutely right. McGeelan, he scared me to the point where he said that if I didn't do exactly what he wanted, because he was active duty military, that he would make sure he would get our child. And I knew that was not going to be an option. He was never going to get her. I don't care what, he was not going to get her. And so I owned what I did. I made a deal with the devil. I told him as long as he did not hit my stomach, I wouldn't hit him back. And the one thing that people who do any kind of martial art training will tell you is that you de-escalate the situation. And the thing is that when you're woken up in the middle of the night with your husband straddled over you, punching you in the face to tell you to get up and get him some water because he's thirsty, you know that there's a very slim chance that you're going to get out of this alive.
So that's I remember the first time we talked and you told me about this, some of the the stuff. And I remember thinking about it for some time afterwards. And I have the same feeling now. I don't know what gets into people to create that kind of behavior. And what you've described, battered woman syndrome, it doesn't really matter the name, but it is the act of allowing things to go on that we know somewhere in our heart we shouldn't, and yet we do anyway for some complicated reason or reasons. You suffered a great deal of physical damage because of that, and you've recently had another medical intervention that was a result of that. Because how many years ago was that? How long have you been out of that relationship?
Over 17 years.
Okay, so you've been out of that relationship for 17 years, and something recently happened that is part of the continuing fallout from that injury or those injuries. So I'd like you to tell us what happened, but more importantly than what happened, those kinds of things could be a real trigger. So what are you doing with this event and the fallout?
Well, I have to tell you that, like I've said previously, my daughter was my first and only priority, as you know, because you were a parent. And that what happened was when I got to my daughter, I was in a wheelchair and I said, if it's not life-threatening, it has to wait. So I have to own the fact that a lot of my injuries were exacerbated in detail because of the fact that I didn't get them fixed right away. So my daughter was coding every day. She was having seizures every day. We had to make the decision to put a tracheostomy tube in so she could breathe out of a tube in her neck. That was her only chance of survival. She had 4 surgeries before she was a week old. And she fit in my hand. And so my priority was her. So for 6 months, I never left her bedside. I literally stayed in that hospital and didn't leave. And with all of that, I did. I waited and waited and waited until she was in a better, safer place for me to have any of my injuries corrected and fixed. So constantly my jaw was dislocating. I was losing sensation in my arm. My shoulder would dislocate. I was walking with a broken foot, all of these injuries. But the thing is that I was still here and she was still here, and that's all that mattered. So while this was going on, I fought for the divorce, fought for the termination of rights. I end up just feel like all I'm doing is fighting to survive. And we had, let's see, she's had 34 surgeries to date. I've had over 100. I stopped counting. And I had 16 surgeries to work on my arm and hand. My fingers ended up having what they call the claw hand, where it kind of goes inward. My fingers, they took the bones and put pins and screws, plates, wiring in there. Then we did 4 implanted devices, like a Bioness device, a stem router device that would constantly send me electrical current. I did a nerve conductive study that showed that the nerve, the ulnar nerve and half the medial nerve, and the muscles were severed. They were just gone. And next thing, after surgery, and nothing would work, I was told down the line a probability of amputation, but I refused. I just couldn't imagine. And after all this time, I literally was given no other option. I was diagnosed with CRPS, which is complex regional pain syndrome. And after all the nerve damage, I had no choice. So not even 6 months ago, I lost my hand and half of my arm.
Okay. So not to dwell on the physical damage, because although severe and inexcusable and heart-wrenching and all of the rest, it proves a real point. And that is that Victoria is somebody else. She's not her body. She is a spirit. She is a person inside of that. And, you know, you have people that lose legs or arms, and it doesn't change the fact that they're in there still. They're still them, right? Did the fact that this happened now cause any kind of reaction or negativity toward those things, rekindling of that stuff those many years ago, or is that all gone?
Keelan, it was very hard. I have a fantastic team of surgeons, and they've done so many with me. And I always come into the surgery, and I'm someone who always, as you know, makes them laugh. So I'm like, oh, you're going to go get on my nerves and leave me in stitches. I get it. And so for this one, I go in there, and one of the nurses was getting ready to have a baby, and I'd gotten her like a little baby basket to welcome her soon to be. And my anesthesiologist was over there with me, and I literally said, can you just wait a minute? And I said, look, how do you say goodbye to your hand? Like, how do you say goodbye to your arm? And I said, you know, this was the arm that held my daughter. This is the arm that held her hand. This is the hand that held my grandparents' hands that meant the world to me. How do I say goodbye to that? I feel like part of me is dying again. And so first time ever in an OR, I'm crying profusely. And the nurse over me is like, because, you know, they strap your arms down. And the nurse over me is literally wiping my face. She's wiping her face with like the side of her hand. And my surgeon, who is amazing man, he comes in and he has tears going down his eyes. And he's like, I never thought this road, kiddo, would bring us here. And I just was like, I never thought I'd have to say goodbye to my hand. I feel like part of me is dying. And that was really tough. I came home the same night. I refused to be admitted into the hospital. I've never taken a single pain medication ever for any surgery, because I have to be ready with my daughter at any moment. So I literally came home, and my husband now, bless his heart, he literally comes in and he's like, let me help you undress. I'm like, I got it. And I just looked down and saw it, and he had taken a picture, and I was out of it on the way home. He had taken a picture of him holding his hand on my nub, as he calls it now. And he would make comments like, I nub you. And I'm like, yeah, that's funny. And it was hard at first learning to do everything over again. Like, people take for granted, try brushing your hair, washing your hair, getting dressed. The tiniest things become so frustrating. Opening a bottle, you know, like a bottle of anything, like milk, you can't. It takes two hands. I was making dinner. How do you stir and how do you hold the pot at the same time? How do you use an electric can opener? These are all things that people take for granted. And my husband's like, let me help you. And I refused. I was like, nope, I will do this. I will get this. I've since got a prosthetic arm. I refuse to wear it. I told my team it is a very decorative piece that lays on my dresser, because I feel like so much of me, Keelan, is not me anymore, that I don't want any more artificial anything. And I know it works great for some people, and God bless them. I can make it work. I can put it on and I can make it move, but it's in my way and I don't want it. So it just stays where it does, and I'm going to do things my way.
So part of that feisty spirit is what's helped you get through all this, and the determination, you know, a determination to make stuff work. And that's something I just really admire, because you have made those choices, and waiting for 6 months to get your injuries looked after. I want to move now to the commitment you have at several levels to your daughter. Now, she was born with a set of things, and you can describe whatever of that you'd like that made you have to pay all that attention. And she was in your hand, and as you described, and, you know, was a miracle child, and now is, you know, many years old. How old is she? 14, 15?
She's almost 17.
17. All right. So she's nearly 17, still alive against all odds.
Yes.
And the only reason on earth is because you were there. So talk about her and what you guys have done in this 17 years. And then I'm going to want to have you introduce your husband a little bit, how he plays into this. But tell me about the growth of your daughter and the struggles you've been through, because this is the real stuff that makes people realize nothing is important except what you choose. So talk about your girl.
Faith is the love of my life. And she was told she wasn't going to make it. I became very close with the chaplain. They actually came up and had a conversation with me, and I said, don't ever have this conversation with me again. She's coming home. And so she has a very small, it's only just a few millimeters wide tongue. They said it's non-functional. It'll never work. She won't talk. She won't eat. She won't be able to do any of these things. The frontal lobe of her brain had severe damage due to all the coding and the seizures. She was having 20 seizures a day in the NICU. She was coding every single day. She was going blue. At one point, she went gray. And then I started training with the respiratory team. They make you room in. And I said, I want to learn how to use every piece of equipment. Then I want you to break that equipment, not like physically break it, but I want you to make it inoperable and then tell me how to fix it. So if she gets a plug, I know how to get it out. I need to know how to do any and everything and then some. So just train me. Well, she was in a medically induced coma. So I started to teach myself sign because I didn't want her to not be able to communicate her frustrations. So I started learning sign. And when she came through, I started teaching her so she could tell me what she needed. And for 2.5 years, I around the clock took care of her. Knock on wood, she never really had any life-threatening issues. She had a couple of plugs in the trach that caused for an emergent trach change. And then we literally would have bronchoscopies done constantly. They would remove granulomas out of her throat. She was a very hard intubation. She had nasal stents. She had mandibular distractors, which looked like little rods out of the back of the skull. And twice a day, I'd have to crank them to bring her jaw out because her jaw was so receded backwards. She didn't look like she had one. And so we did that. And she never cried. She just was so happy all the time and smile and just laugh. And even you couldn't hear her because you cannot hear with a trach patient unless they either cap the trach or they have what's called a pacemir valve on the trach. And she was not at that level to wear one yet. So everywhere we went, I carried 11 pieces of equipment from an oxygen to an emergent bag to a trach bag to a pulse ox monitor to the apnea, you name it. And I'd always have it set ridiculously high. And the doctor say, that's too high. You don't have to have the alarm set that high because, you know, it's when her O2 drops here that we have to have concern. And I said, no, it's when it's here that gives me more time when she needs a little more attention. So that's why. And so I would have to do trach changes and make sure there was no granulation or any kind of infection around the stoma. And there never was. And her feeding tube, she would be on feeds all the time on a continuous. And then I started putting her on them at night. And the doctor said, what are you doing? Why are you putting her on them at night? And I said, well, if she's going to be in bed laying down, and I have her kind of arched up a little bit so that she can't choke, then she doesn't have to wear this backpack during the day and be tied to another tube. And I don't want her to see that. So her nursery had everything medical behind her and everything baby in front of her. I didn't want her to see all of that behind her on a daily basis. So we did everything as if she didn't have it. She was dressed to the nines all the time. And like a lot of people didn't notice those things. And so I would literally stay up around the clock as much as possible. And then when I would nap right beside her with the apnea machine beside me and the pulse ox and everything beside me so that I could hear if she even desatted for a second because she couldn't cry. And when she was in the hospital, I stayed with her in the hospital. I didn't go home. And then as she progressed, we had 25 appointments a week from physical therapy to, speech therapy to they wanted to give her an AllCom device to help her communicate. She did not want it. She is feisty as all get out. Don't know where she gets
I wonder
it.
Where she gets that.
I don't know where she gets it from. And so the media actually heard about her and her doing what she does. And they did a story on her and her story got an Emmy. And she doesn't want that recognition. She says, I just want to help others. So at the age of four, she sat with Santa and told Santa she wanted to give kids like her a Christmas. So we started a fundraiser every year, and we'd raise between 200 and 450 toys. And we would go to the chronic facilities, and she'd hand them out, not just to the child in the bed, but she'd hand them out to their siblings and say, your brother or sister got this for you. And she never wanted any of them. If I said, do you want one of these for everything you've done raising this? Do you want one? No, I got my wish. And that's what she always would say. And, you know, one of the most amazing things about being her mom, Keelan, that really just got me is when she is a smart aleck, to say the least. When I had my amputation, she told my surgeon that day we were getting ready to go in, and he said to her, I'm going to take great care of your mom. She'll be out, you know, probably after dinner time. And she says, I have one question. Oh, you're going to make me cry. And he said, okay. And he said, what's the question? She goes, can you take my arm and give it to her instead? I want my mom to have my arm. I don't want her not to have one. And it just showed me what, not that I already didn't know it, but just what an amazing soul that this child carries. And she sticks up for the underdog. She's always right there. She hosts her podcast. She has celebrities coming out of the woodwork endorsing her. And she's just a light. People get around her and she's infectious. She really, really is.
So let's talk about the progression, because you spent however many nights awake and next to her and all the things that you described so rapidly that anybody that would be keeping score will never understand how you lived without sleep for so long. But you said she said to the surgeon, and she, so what has happened now with her ability to communicate and create, you know, podcasts? You described her tongue. What has happened because of all this good care and the attention? And, you know, next time she says she doesn't want that stuff, tell her to take it anyway, because it isn't about her. It's about people trying to appreciate and recognize what she's doing, not for her glory, but it gives her the opportunity to do more. Mm-hmm. Because when you get that kind of recognition, you get to spread your influence. So I know she knows that. But anyway.
Yes.
Tell us about her development now so she can have a podcast and the stuff she's doing.
Well, I taught her how to do different things. Like, you know, your tongue has to go to the top of your mouth when you say, I need. So I taught her to say, I want. And so she'd say, I want pencil. Or because she also had apraxia, which means P's, B's, and M's were very challenging. So we would substitute words for other words. And so like apple sounded like at-all. And, you know, things of that nature. Like, so she started learning to talk. She had a speech pathologist. She had the head of speech pathology team at the Children's Hospital. And she literally would just use different words. She also signed. She would write out if somebody didn't know a sign, she would write down what she needed or she wanted. The frontal lobe has caused like an executive function disorder. She reads on a college level. She has published her first book, and it opened up on Amazon's bestseller list. And it's called I Am Kitten, which is fantastic. And her next one is coming out here probably in the next 6-8 weeks. And so she learned, they told her that tongue would never move. And so if your listeners Google or go to Amazon, they can find that they have these like cheek swabs, and they're different flavors. And I went and I ordered a bunch of them. And I'd say, all right, let's play catch it. And I would go in there and just every couple of hours, just try to get her tongue to wake up. And I'd said, is it always sleeping? Is it the lazy tongue? And I would try to get it to move and move and move. And finally it did. And she was like, Mom. And this tiny, cutest little tongue sticks out barely, because her anatomy in her mouth is totally different than ours. And it sticks out just a tiny little bit. I took her to her speech pathologist. We knocked on the door and I said, I have to show you something. And she stuck her tongue out at him. And she goes, medical therapy. And it was just the best. And she just blew everybody away. And so now she has learned to maneuver that where she can. Not only that, but she eats and drinks. The food has to be soft. It's, you know, much smaller in volume. But she can do all those things. And nobody can understand how she does it. Like, we've done swallow studies where we're watching it with contrast. And we don't understand how she's capable of doing it. But she does. And anything they've ever said you can't do, she basically said, pound sand, watch out, I'm going to do it. And so she has.
So I love this. And this kind of heroic effort, it makes me just wonder, like you personally and her have had just spectacular challenges, spectacular in a grumpy way, not a good way, and yet overcome them. Here you are, vibrant, alive, capable, running three podcasts. You're still taking care of your daughter, and she's magnificently growing and making a difference in the world. You've mentioned a couple of times your husband. When did he come into the picture, and how did that happen? If you can share that with us.
Absolutely. He, the love of my life that broke my heart, we stayed friends. It was one of the hardest things ever. When he found out that I was in an abusive situation, he actually faulted himself, thinking it was his fault that it happened. And I reassured him that it was not. When I went to court, he went with me. He was a police officer. And you have never met two people who hated each other as much as those two did, the two men did. And he went to court with me. He went to the hospital numerous times to see her. And from day one, I told her that if anyone was ever going to be her dad, it was going to be him. Nobody else deserved that right. It took somebody amazingly special to fill that role. And so we stayed friends the whole time. And several years ago, he and I got back together and we're married and he's adopted her.
So that's a worthy story. And I say worthy just because, you know, in my life, I've had a whole bunch of miraculous things that can't be explained happen. And this is one of those. And it's touching and brings me to the place of emotion, which I accept and embrace gratefully. What is it that when you would talk to someone with the kind of experiences you've had, mm-hmm. when you would talk to someone that is weak or sad or beating themselves up or in a difficult situation, how do you begin to reach and to address their heart so they can begin to think differently?
Well, let's start with the mom that's watching her child for whatever reason, who has become an audible, who can't tell them what they need. And the frustration ends up lapsing into their relationship. And I go in there and say, I'm going to teach you how to sign. And if you learn five signs, I'll teach you one that you want to know, as long as it's not bad. And then I tell that parent, do you remember when you had this sweet angel right here and that baby took a hold of your pinky and you just knew that that child loved you and you love that child? Before I walk out of this room, that child's going to tell you they love you again without saying a word. And it just brings a sense of calmness over them. And that child can sign, I love you. And that frustration just goes away. And the parent's not frustrated at the child. The parent's frustrated at the situation and that they can't do more for the child. The person that comes to me that, you know, I had someone say, because of your book, I got out and I survived. And that alone was worth writing it, just for that one person alone. And they said, I'm too weak. Well, you know, you're not. You're the strong one. You're the survivor. Do not give that power to that predator, that abuser. You don't give them that power. You have one heart and you can fill it with all the love in the world or all the hate. It only holds one. And you don't want to give them any more. They don't deserve it. And I tell people, you know, I used to think, like, my biological parents told me I look like the Elephant Man and Freddy Krueger had a kid. And I'm all scarred up. I have scars everywhere, whether it's from the surgeries or from him. And I would say, you know what? The longest time I had such a hard time looking at those scars. And now I look at him as like, that's how many times he tried and he failed. He can't win. He's weak. Because he couldn't win. And I tell everybody, you're the strong one. You are that one. That inner light has not gone out. It is still there. And it might be flickering, but you know what? That flicker will start a wildfire. And I'm going to remind you where it is, because you are worth fighting for. You are a 2.0 version. No one raises their hand and says, I want to get beaten. I'm going to choose to be in an abusive relationship. Nobody asks for that. And nobody deserves it. Male, female, trans, whatever the situation is. They don't deserve it. And so you remind them that they are a human being you know, and when I do speaking engagements, I think one of the most powerful things, I love when someone comes in and says, well, they chose to stay, so they deserve it. And I give them the analogy. I'm like, so you've never been in a situation of abuse. Good for you. Because you know what? One in four have. And that's what's reported. So let me ask you this. I'm so happy that you've never had to experience with me and your daughter or your sister, or whoever your guest is here with you today. But let's say, God forbid, you find out you have a brain tumor. Are you going to go to a podiatrist? Are you going to go to a foot doctor to find out how to cure yourself? And she's like, why would I do that? Well, why are you going to tell someone who you've never experienced what she's gone through how to feel when she's gone through something she didn't elect to get into? So, of course, you're going to want the best of the best. You're going to want the best neurosurgeon possible to help you. And that's why you go down that route. But you're not going to go to a podiatrist who knows absolutely nothing. So instead of critiquing your sister, your wife, your daughter, whatever the case may be, or your son, don't critique them. Support them. Help them realize that they are a loving person. At one point in time, you loved them. You cherish something about them. They deserve either be there for them, hold their hand. If they're not ready to talk, sit with them and let them know they're not alone, because that means more than you have any idea. Let them know that they have a place to stay. Offer to help in any way that you can. Don't beat them when they're down, because we can't get any lower when we're at that phase. Show us that we are worth fighting for, because I will stay with those people every single step of the way, from helping them get their home as safe as can be until they get out and do it safely and survive. We come up with a safety plan and make sure that it works so that they can get out, to reinventing themselves. I will work with you, help you build your resume, help you get a job. I will write a letter of recommendation. Anything I can do to help and support along the ways, I will. And when you feel like somebody cares and that you matter, they fight.
So there's a bunch of interesting things there. Lots of people can say lots of words about their willingness to help, but Victoria demonstrated, and I'm speaking at you in the third person, I know, but you were with your daughter all the way.
Yes.
In all those times and nights and things. So when you say that you help people in this inclusive, expansive way, there is truth there, because that's something you already have done for someone else. You have lived through it yourself, and you now offer a variety of kinds of services for others, and the way you've got these podcasts going and adding good to the world. So 2023 is here. We've got inflation, we've got pandemic done, I think, mostly, or whatever it is. Yeah, hopefully, who knows? What are your goals? Like, what are you thinking about for this year? And you may say nothing, I'm just doing one day at a time, and that's okay too. But given everything that you're doing, just wondering what your goals are. Like, you just told me that you're in the top 1.5% and you've got 40 listen score. I saw your post. So what are you trying to do this year, 2023?
I am trying to, now that we're breeding service dogs, my husband and I have been funding this out of our own pocket from day one. And it's incredibly expensive. I cannot go back and do what I used to do professionally anymore. I'm disabled, obviously. And so we are breeding the golden retrievers, and we're trying to help them get their fur ever home. And doing that is incredibly expensive. And so we have set up a GoFundMe to help. We are in the process of getting our 501c3, but we've had to take a little longer because of the expense of it to do that. My husband and I have sacrificed a lot. As long as our kids are taken care of and they have a roof over their head and food on the table and whatever they need, then that's all that matters to us, is to be able to help, because there's so many people that having that forever best friend with you. I have a service dog. My daughter has a service dog that goes with you everywhere. They go everywhere with you. People don't understand that. They stay in the hospital with you. They go into appointments with you. They go to the restaurants with you and movie theaters. They just can't go in an OR. They can go everywhere else. And to have that best friend beside you who just wants your attention and some snuggles really makes the fight worth fighting for even more. And to see a child light up when they have that best friend right there that just wants to love on them, it's so worth it. So that's what we're also trying to do. We are in the process of beginning a production on an amazing series called Unbreakable Justice, where we are diving in to really open up awareness for sexual violence from a child all the way to a senior, and how that can be kind of stopped by looking at red flags, what can be done. We have an officer's point of view, my point of view as a survivor. We have a support staff that's also going to be in there. And we have another wonderful gentleman who his wife went through it, and he wrote a book about supporting and what the supporter of a survivor can do. He will be participating in the Unstoppable Justice with us as well. And so it's really the more we can, the more we do. We have we offer free classes for support groups. We offer bringing people together. I have a very private group that I vet everybody in, and people who are in there know that they're safe and that there's no wolves coming in. They are completely safe in that group. And it's the opportunity of resources is what we're trying to do, but we're trying to do it with what we can. And that's why, you know, we're in the process of trying to do our 501c3, but we want to help more and more.
Yes, you do. And I don't want to run out of time. I want you to you talk fast because you have lots to say, and I love it. And I love everything about you. I want you to slow down.
Sorry.
I want you to tell people. No, we're at the end. I don't care about that. I want just for this piece, I want you to slow down and tell people where to find everything, so that if someone wants to support your work or be the beneficiaries of it or learn what you've done or finding your podcasts or the books that your daughter wrote and that you wrote. And you said kids. Do you have more than one?
My husband had two when we got married, but I grew like his son I've known since he was born. And so I consider them my other kids.
That's fine. You just used the plural, and I was just curious where the others came from. All right. So slow down so that everybody can take notes and write this down and find your stuff.
Okay.
If they feel called to, and I can't figure out why they wouldn't. So where can they find you?
Well, on Amazon, my daughter is under Faith Cure Solomon, and it's I Am Kitten. And I have my book, Who Kicked First, and that is also on Amazon.
Say it again. Who Hit First?
Who Kicked First.
Oh, Who Kicked First. Okay,
who
cool.
First. And we are on Facebook. We have a Facebook group called A Contagious Smile. We have a Facebook page called A Contagious Smile. TikTok and Instagram are A Contagious Smile. You can catch any of our podcasts on any of the platforms that you can catch podcasts, Apple, Spotify, you name it. Our website is acontagioussmile.com, where we have our GoFundMe listed as well. And you can see some really cute puppies. They're so cute. We have 13 puppies that were just born on top of all of our other dogs. And so there's just a lot of puppy love around here right now.
Can you tell me the names of the podcasts? Let me just ask this. Acontagioussmile.com, are the podcasts listed on there so people can find that?
They are listed on there. If you want to come on and be a guest, you can go through there. If you go to iTunes or you go to Spotify and you put in A Contagious Smile, all of our episodes will show up for you there.
For all three podcasts?
Yes, because we only do Teen Talk based upon the kids' schedules and their health. But when summer comes, we do more regularly.
Yeah, that's fine. I just want people to be able to not only be blown away by the courage that you've demonstrated and their hearts touched by the courage of your daughter and the choices you've made to talk about, to support, to work, to make better, to eliminate struggles and all the things that you're doing. My heart is softened when I listen to you talk, and I love who you are and what you're doing. We're coming to the end. So I want to ask you in a final way, what in the world full of everything that it is, and as a sort of what would you tell people? Give me a last piece, a thought, and I know people ask this all the time. What would you say to people that are struggling, whether it's with these particular issues or not? What would you say?
I would tell them that I want them to close their eyes and let them resonate this for just a minute, that you have survived 100% of your worst days. You've survived 100%. You're stronger than them. You're a warrior. And we can get through this together. You're not alone.
Well, bless your heart. Thank you. Thank you for everything you're doing. Thank you for showing up again and for showing up every day for the people you do, for your girl, for your husband's kids, and for everything about all that. So thank you.
Well, bless you for having me again. Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to be here.
You are just absolutely welcome.
Thank you.
So I want you to listen to this a couple of times. I have known Victoria for a little bit, and the story is astounding. And it makes you mad, happy, sad, and grateful all at the same time. But what it also does is it gives you an insight into true courage. It gives you an opportunity to ask yourself questions about what else you can do to add good to the world. You do have control of your life. You can choose to make a difference. You can choose to change whatever you don't like and build on what you do so that you, all the time, can live your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.